In this episode of Climb Hard, Love Harder, you're going to hear from Chris Lawrence. He is a cancer survivor, a climber, a skier, outdoor backcountry guide, author. Make sure you check out in the notes his page online, Hope Has Arrived, as well as his book, Call to the Wild. And we've got a guest show host today, so enjoy.
Okay.
Hey.
Hey.
Welcome.
Welcome to Climb Hard, Love Harder podcast.
I'm Dean.
I'm Eric. And we are about to jump in the sauna. And it has been a miserable winter. Ice climbing season was just the pits.
Yeah.
And we're just going to go get warmed up a little bit. Shake off some of the winter doldrums.
And it's sauna for any of you Finlanders out there. Because I'm sure we have a lot of Finlander Finnish listeners.
All you Finnish listeners, enjoy this podcast.
Yes.
Welcome to Climb Hard, Love Harder podcast. I'm Eric Askren, and my normal co-host, Dean Olin, Dean, you dog, can't be with us, but in his place, and Dean, you better be paying attention because Mike Sandifer is a pretty cool dude. Mike Sandifer is co-hosting as a guest. Guest co-host Mike Sandifer, Climbers for Christ regional director, chapter coordinator out of Tacoma, Washington. And Mike, thank you so much for being willing to co-host and be a guest co-host and put up with all the shenanigans.
Yeah, absolutely. Glad to be here.
Oh my gosh. Okay, is there like one thing that the now we've already done a podcast with you, but is there like one thing that the audience should know about you before they start listening in serious and taking you seriously?
Oh my gosh. I don't know that anybody should take me seriously. You caught me after a whole day of teaching high school students, so like I might be a little snarky, like just, you know, throw in some of the really random like language they use, you know.
Yep. Oh, I wish
cap,
you would.
Skibbity, like all of that, so no.
That's gonna be super nice. And we've got Mike, we've got Chris Lawrence with us on the podcast today. Chris, you are an outdoor enthusiast, you are a guide, you are a climber, and you also have some really unique and wonderful ministry passions that are related but unrelated, but still are all kind of part and parcel of the thing. I'm hoping that here in just a little bit, you can share with us a little bit about that too. So welcome, Chris.
Hey, thank you. It's great to be with you guys.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so first things first. Chris, tell us a little bit about yourself. Who are you? What gets you up in the morning?
Yeah. So I'm Chris Lawrence. You covered a lot of categories well, but, I'm a climber. I love climbing. I'm an outdoor guide. I'm an author. I'm also the, executive director of a cancer nonprofit, which, you guys will probably get to hear more about how that became part of my life, but and also I would say most importantly, I'm a husband to beautiful wife and a father of two kids, and I'm blessed, man. I really love my life. So I think just, you know, getting up and being with my family and a lot of the nonprofit and ministry things I get to do, not to mention the outdoor stuff, that's all that kind of swirls around and keeps me going every day. So
that's awesome. Okay, so full disclosure, I Googled you and like, right? The picture that comes up of you, dude, that's super cool. Like you're all standing there, like you know what you're doing. You got your helmet on, you got your harness on. I'm like, okay, dude checks off two of the check mark boxes. He's got a helmet and a harness. Can't be anything wrong with this guy.
You know, what's funny is like, I have a pretty common name. And so you might find like a DJ or some other random thing out there that's totally not me, but I'm glad you found the right Chris Lawrence. So
me too. Cause that'd be embarrassing if I was like doing a podcast interview with like the wrong Chris Lawrence, which would be pretty hilarious.
I was going to say the next one down on the list looks like for financial services. It is tax. It is tax season. I'm just thinking.
Oh, man. Like 20 minutes into the interview, and he's like, who is this again?
I can barely keep a budget, so the finance guy's definitely not me.
That is so good. Okay, so, Chris, this is a Climbers for Christ podcast. So tell us about your spiritual life. Do you have a spiritual life? Are you like a person of faith? Share with us just a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's definitely a huge part of my life. I'm a follower of Jesus, and I have been since I was young, though, you know, that like when I was in high school, for example, I was pretty not spiritually interested. And then, you know, God just kind of did some things in my life towards the end of high school. And it's kind of been full throttle since, and just really love that part of my life, and love helping other people connect with God as well that want that. So
nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Mike, what do you think? Should we keep this guy around?
I think we should keep him around. That totally resonated with me. So.
Oh man. Well, Mike, you're the guest host. Don't.
You're gonna throw that out at me, yeah.
I am. I'm throwing you under the bus. Well, I'm waiting on. Now, see if Dean were sitting here with me, I'd be like looking at Dean like, dude, come on. And then we'd probably clink our glasses.
Yeah, probably so. So, well, Chris, you know, in light of that, and thinking of who we are, so you kind of started taking faith seriously coming out of high school, going into college. Like, where did outdoors come into play with all that?
Ooh, yeah, that's a good question. So I grew up in South Dakota, so I'm one of those, you know, Midwest people that like, once they were exposed to mountains, were like, wow, this is amazing. I need to do that more. I'd say kind of how it happened for me. I mean, there was a friend that took me climbing when I was in high school around, there's actually some climbing around my hometown in South Dakota, and it's on the eastern part of the state. The western part of South Dakota is obviously, the climbing is epic. I didn't grow up near there, but, and then also we had this little ski area in my hometown, and I went to this, I got into racing. That's kind of a thing in the Midwest,
mm-hmm.
surprisingly. And, you know, a friend invited me to go to this camp in Oregon with him during the summer. And it's like a racing camp. And what was so cool, when I went out there, you know, you'd have to get up super early. That part wasn't great. But to go, you know, like go ski on Mount Hood. And then after like, you know, 10 or 11, the snow would get so like heated up, they pretty much like made you go do outdoor stuff every day. Like,
darn. So like,
okay, you can go climb, you can go mountain bike, or you're going to go play Ultimate Frisbee, but nobody's sitting around. And we just did that every day for like 2 weeks. And afterwards I'm like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. This lifestyle is like, I was like, this is, I think I've always wanted this. I didn't even know it.
Hey, so, have you climbed it in the Needles?
Yes.
Would you say that's your home crag or?
It's not. I wish I could claim it. I've definitely climbed there.
Mike, have you ever climbed at the Needles in South Dakota?
I have not. No.
Okay. It is. I'm just saying, I think a person has to have thick skin to climb there. Like both figuratively and literally.
Yeah.
Chris, that climbing is probably, I've climbed a lot of scary stuff. That is probably some of the scariest stuff I have climbed, because dude, those crystals on the rock they're like indescribably huge.
Yes.
Like, am I exaggerating?
No, you're not. And the crystals are kind of funky. I mean, you know, most of the time they're solid, but occasionally they'll they'll pop off. So
yeah, pop right out.
It's a different style of climbing there. I mean, they're really all into, you know, it's these trad routes, but then there's no gear. So you're like,
exactly.
Oh,
like, yes. Well, you're run out. So this is, and Mike, this is like a 5'4" or something, 5'5". Like there are some really hard stiff ones, but a lot of them are just, you know, there's some really great moderates, but there's no gear. So you're like basically free soloing. You're like tethered free soloing because you have a rope. And like the thought of sliding down this thing or like falling backward into the other, you know, opposing rock is just terrifying.
So it's just cheese grater. Like,
oh yeah.
Oh, dang.
It's like a lot of, you know, like slinging chicken heads.
Yes.
As your pro, like, which are just a big crystal.
Yeah.
So you're like, please stay on there, little girth hitch. Stay strong. You know, as you climb up above it and you're like, did I snug that up enough?
Like, right?
I really need that piece.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Mike, remember those girth hitching chicken heads we did there in that one climb that you were right above me?
Yeah.
In Las Vegas outside of Red Rocks. Holy smokes. That was that was a pucker fest.
Very much so.
Oh Lord. So the needles, I really enjoyed climbing in the needles, and I was okay. Again, full disclosure, I was about to make fun of South Dakota for its flatness and like, you have climbing there. And then all of a sudden you said like Nissan, I was like, oh my gosh, yes, there's needles of South Dakota. I felt really bad then afterward. And I've actually climbed there.
Yeah. Well, you know, what's funny is that it's more on the map these days, because before I'd tell people I'm from South Dakota, and not even climbers would be like, whatever. But now they're like, oh, I need to go there and climb. I like heard about the Black Hills. Like, I just think there's something about the last, like, especially the COVID era where people are like, wow,
right.
Maybe I need to move out to the Black Hills.
Well, and it's beautiful. Plus it's like, it is so historic. Like there's so much historic climbing there.
Yes.
And it's old school and it's brutal, but honest and lovely. And it is. And the topography is amazing. It's gorgeous. And some of those climbs are just back in the pucker brush.
Oh, yeah.
You can get lost real easy.
Yeah, it's like, what is it? The Urban Jan Khan.
Yeah.
They, like, did a ton of climbing there. And there's all this history. And it's not even just the needles. It's Cathedral Spires. It's Spearfish Canyon. And then just, there's so much rock on even parts of Rushmore. It's kind of shocking how much rock is there. Sylvan Lake.
Yeah. I haven't been to a bunch of that. We need to do a road trip, Mike.
Yeah, I was going to say, like out of curiosity, I just pulled up Mountain Project. Man, Spearfish Canyon, 941 routes down for it. Yeah.
Oh, so. Yeah.
That's the real deal. Chris, you live in the real deal.
Well, I actually live in Colorado Springs.
Or you're from the real deal.
Yeah, I'm from the real deal. I kind of wish, I ask my parents sometimes, like, why didn't we grow up on the western part of the state? But that's okay, you know.
Right, yeah.
Okay, so how did you get into guiding?
Do
you guide?
So I guide multi-sport, you know, like I guide rock climbing, guide canyoneering, whitewater rafting. I used to do some snowshoe guiding. I love to backcountry ski. I don't love snowshoe guiding, but you know, college students like it, so I got to do it sometimes. But I got into it. So in college I was a river guide, and then, you know, after college when I started serving with, it's called Lifelines Outdoors, it's part of this Christian organization called Crew, and I was a writer for their magazine, and then I started getting into Lifelines, and that's kind of where more of like a career as a guide I got into, and I did that for it was like at least 12 years full time. It's just been the last few years because, you know, part of this cancer nonprofit has grown a lot. I do that full time, and then I just guide on the side a bit because I love guiding so much. I feel like I'd like to be a lifetime guide. It's just fun introducing, you know, there's like the side of you enjoying it yourself, and then there's this other stoke factor that comes from introducing other people to the outdoor and you know, climbing and just kind of seeing them light up, you know.
Yeah
That's so good.
Very good. Yeah.
Okay. So when I was, I'm not going to ask you when the last time was you with Plyman, but do you have a like a favorite climb that you've done, or a like a most proud send, a most proud climb? And it could be anything.
Yeah, there's a, I mean, there's a few. So I live in Colorado Springs. We're actually very close to Garden of the Gods.
Yeah.
My wife and I were married in Colorado Springs. She's from here. You know, I'm not originally from here, but so we kind of, there's one, it's not even a hard climb. It's just really cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a 5.7. It's Montezuma's Tower. It's like this desert tower in Colorado Springs, you know, on sandstone. Like, I love climbing red rocks in Nevada.
Yeah.
You're right.
And this is kind of like that in Colorado Springs.
Ooh.
And it's this really, I mean, it's very exposed. And it's, I love the climb. It's just really fun. It's trad and sport. It's mixed. But my wife and I got engaged on it. So that,
see,
was
that alone makes it totally memorable. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. I was like, it was kind of when we were dating. This is like 12 years ago. And I had just, I climbed Castleton Tower near Moab with a good buddy. And when we were on top, there's this couple that got engaged on the top of this desert tower. And I'm like, dang it, I'm going to do that someday. And then, well, you know, I got to do it on Montezuma's Tower, but in Colorado Springs, not in Utah. So.
Wow. Okay. So we have, we do have Washington State Sandstone. Mike, are you familiar with Washington State Sandstone?
Are you talking about like those, like there's like two or three rare spots where we actually have sandstone, or are you talking about,
yes,
all the other junk that
no, that's Choss, that's Cascade, yeah, Choss, and you leave that alone.
Well, there's
it's the Peshastin Pinnacles,
the Peshastin Pinnacles, there's that spot, but there's also one up Port Angeles and Elwha. That's got a little sandstone.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I haven't climbed there yet, but yeah, the
I have climbed interestingly like two or three times at Peshastin Pinnacles.
Yeah.
Chris, it's this tiny little spot just between Wenatchee, Washington and Leavenworth, Washington. And Leavenworth is like a gateway to tons of Cascade granite. And it's this tiny little craggy spot where the sandstone just like jets out of the ground. And I think the whole thing, maybe at its tallest, is maybe, I don't know, 100
if that,
tall, you know, if that, somewhere in there. But I've climbed it a few times, and I'll tell you what, that stuff is, that place is scary as heck. Holy smokes. Because it's constantly, it's like it's constantly losing its skin. It's, yeah, always, it's so fragile, and it just rubs apart, and oh geez, but it's fun. It's definitely adventure climbing and not for the faint of heart. It's crumbly. Very crumbly.
I know the type. I'll tell you what's funny. So Garden of the Gods, the quality of the sandstone varies drastically depending on the feature, and you know, I kind of had to learn that the hard way. But yeah, some places it's solid. It's great. Yeah. Other places, you're like climbing up, and you know, there's this really old piton. You're like, I'll clip into that, and then you grab it. And whoops, the thing pulls out. You're like, oh, I'll put, yes, that back in there. You know?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yes. You know, yes, nasty. You're like, this is the scariest 5.8 I've ever climbed in my, yes, life. You know?
Oh, yes. I've got to tell, I won't tell the story here because I don't want to use up time, but a buddy of mine, Norm, and I, we were climbing on the big sandstone cliff, and about three quarters of the way up, probably about 500 feet or so, we were, he was leading and I was following. And as I was pulling out his pieces, you know, these are like a BD, like, you know, like the half inch, the inch, the three, the four, I was removing them. And the first couple I pulled out, they were kind of stuck. And so I gave them a little bit of a tug and I pulled them out along with the giant chunk of sandstone that they were stuck in. I just pulled out like, oh. I made holes. I made these squarish holes.
Oh gosh!
In the sandstone, it was like it was just waiting to be crumpled. The whole thing was falling apart. It was next level scary. And he did a great job leading it. And when we got to the top, the where the rope had been running over the kind of the cliff edge where he was belaying me, it had just in the few minutes with no stress or pressure on it, it had cut a divot of probably 2 inches or more. And it was just crazy loose sandstone. It was more like, I don't even know what it was. It was like a sandcastle thing or something. It wasn't rock.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, yeah. It was crazy. Yeah, that whole, that was like a crazy time anyway. What a great time. So, oh my gosh. What other exciting, so is, what's your best, besides getting married and engaged and all that, do you have a best send? Like a particular unique? Did you already tell us, but I missed it?
I mean, you know, I kind of do a lot of sports. I love climbing. Don't get me wrong, but I'm not one of those phenoms. I think for me, like some of the sends in the maybe the 5'10" like trad range have always been kind of a big deal for me. Yeah. And there's some in El Dorado Canyon.
Yeah.
In Colorado, like I mean, like Blind Faith and Handcracker Direct are a few.
Oh my gosh. I have never climbed there, and I really would like to. But some of the, you know, 5'10s all day long, when it's just, when they're, No, I'm a big fan of long multi-pitch moderates.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
I love that. I love that. Okay, well, do you have any, like, big failures or maybe something that wasn't, that was a failure, but it turned out to be a great learning or something that was like you had a big overcome an obstacle, anything like that?
Oh gosh, there's been there's been tons.
And it doesn't have to do with climbing. Maybe it's something else in life.
I mean, with climbing, there's always like, you know, when you get into those long multi-pitch, there's always stuff that can go wrong, you know? I mean, I remember, just one story off the top. I was climbing a route in Red Rocks in Nevada with a buddy, and it was, it's called Prince of Darkness. It's kind of this. You know, it's like it's mixed. It's a mixed route. But we were climbing it in November, and the sun went off it like quickly.
Yeah.
And you know, it was 55 and sunny and really nice.
Yeah.
And then it got like cold, and we're like three or four pitches up, and I'm like, dude, my hands are numb, and like, if you've ever climbed it, it's these really thin edges, and it just went from like really fun to let's get the heck off this thing. I don't know. Crazy misadventure, but just it's, you know, it's kind of crazy how like cold, you know, when it gets like below four, like 50 or 40 and in the shade, suddenly the rock is, you're like, maybe I should be in gloves and like mix climb this sucker, you know, some tools or something.
Have you ever climbed over there in Icebox? Is it Icebox Canyon or Icebox Wall or Refrigerator Wall or?
Oh yeah, refrigerator. Yeah, I did the I think it's the refrigerator buttress. It's like some nine plus. That's a good one.
It is a good one, and it is freaking cold.
Yes, it is.
It is real. Like that wind comes out of the rock like a refrigerator.
Yeah, it does, man. Yeah, they named it right.
Mike,
for
we're not
sure.
Making it up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, next time we're in LV, Mike, let's jump on that. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, sounds it sounds spectacular. Like, my word!
No, you lead.
I can totally see that conversation with us. No, you lead. Why am I? Oh man! Hey, Chris, kind of tying off or leading off of like what Eric started with, like. Challenges in life. You've talked about the fact that you do a cancer nonprofit. What for our audience? Like what got you started on that?
Sure. Yeah. Well, the story is, you know, I was just loving life. I was, you know, newly married, doing outdoor ministry. I was actually up near. I was in Boulder County, so living near Boulder, Colorado, and we were leading an outdoor ministry team there. Life was good. I was 37. We just had our new daughter. And then I get this crazy cancer diagnosis kind of out of the blue. And it was so weird because I felt like I was kind of at one of my healthiest times. Like I was doing some racing, some triathlons and some skimo races and did really well. And people are like, oh, you can't ever get on the podium in Boulder County. And I'm like, well, and it went well. And so I'm like, oh, I'm feeling really strong. And then I mean, this is so crazy. I kind of started having this like tightness in my back for no reason.
Yeah.
And I end up getting this cancer diagnosis. And it was not, this was what was hard. It wasn't just cancer. It was stage four. And it was, it's something called bile duct cancer, which I didn't know what the heck that was. It's still, it's weird even saying, it's like, what is that? But it's liver cancer, essentially. But
bile duct.
Yeah. Okay. So I get this diagnosis and I, you know, at first you're like, okay, this is going to suck for a while. And then it was more like, oh, you have a year or year and a half to live.
Right.
That was kind of what was going on at 37 years old. So,
and honestly, for a lot of those cancers, a year to a year and a half is favorable. It's crazy. Like
you're absolutely correct. They were kind of like, that was like, yeah, maybe if you do some chemo, maybe you could last a year, year and a half. You're like, what?
And Mike, doesn't your wife does something with cancer or works in that field? Or...
Yeah. My wife is a clinical research nurse. And so she actually works in with clinical trials on different types of cancer. So she's done pancreatic, lung, like the whole bit. So yeah, my familiarity through her with pancreatic and other, you know, cancers in that digestive region. Yeah, it's crazy because they're caught. They're so often they're caught so late.
Yes.
That you just had no idea how sick you were until all of a sudden they're like, hey, by the way.
What happened then, Chris? What was like, because you're clearly here. How long ago was that?
Yeah, it was 8 years ago.
And
I'm doing
amazing.
What happened? Like, there's got to be some in between story.
Oh, there was, man. It's you know, like, kind of what happened was, and this is where like faith for me really comes into play. I can't mess around and just be like, oh, you know, it was science or kind of what happened was, my wife and I, we ended up moving back to South Dakota just simply to be near my family. We just needed some support.
Right.
And we go back there. And so I'm from this town in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. It's actually crazy. They have really good medical community there.
Mm-hmm.
And I end up, you know, going to these cancer centers there and kind of the same thing. They're like, yeah, it's really bad. You don't have much time. And then I end up through a series of events meeting with this research doctor. And he apparently used to run his own cancer center. He's this British guy. And I didn't really know, honestly, why we were meeting with them at first, because I'm like, I don't really want to talk to anybody else. Like, every time they share about this diagnosis, it's like the most painful thing. It's like, you know, I have this 6-month-old daughter. Oh, I love my life. I don't really want to talk about diagnosis and all this
crap. Right.
But this doctor comes in and he's like, well, you know, they kind of did this blood sequencing test. And he's like, I got good news for you. I know how to treat this. And I'm just like, what? Like, who is this guy? You know?
Right. And, yeah.
And it's like, you know, and he wasn't like saying there was any guarantees, but he's like, no, I know, here's based on like your genetic profile. This is what's causing this cancer. This is the type of treatment we do. And he was like far out on the edge, which is now a lot of people are using the same stuff. I mean, there are, you know, if by chance anybody's listening to this that they have cancer or someone they care about does, like, there is more hope medically now than maybe there has been in a long time.
Absolutely. You know. Yeah.
But I mean, you know, I talk to people all the time. I even hear of other stage four people that it's like, you know, before it was not looking good. And now like they've done some amazing things. But anyway, so this guy does this. I go through this process of treatment. And within like 3 months, my scans were showing clear.
What?
Yeah.
Dang, that is amazing.
That is amazing.
But it was crazy because it bothered the scientists. You know, like, they're like, some of the traditional oncology, they're like, your scan is clear. This tumor is blackened and dying. But there's no cure for this, so sorry. You know, and I'm like, what?
yes, no cure, as you said.
Pulled between, you know, and I, you know, pulled between like kind of research and traditional, you know, oncology. And it was pretty tight to walk, a tough road to walk, but just,
yeah,
that's kind of where this hope part came in, where I kind of learned a crash course on what hope is. and why it matters so much. And that was kind of, that's kind of what I went through. And it was not like, oh, my scan was clear and then life was easy. It was, you know, they didn't know what to do because here my scan is clear. They kind of hadn't really reached that point so quickly or so easily. And so they still kept me on treatment, and it was kind of a journey for a few different years. I mean, I didn't climb for a year and a half.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I would have loved to have climbed, but that was kind of the furthest thing from my
health
and
community at that point.
Yeah, because the standard of care treatments are, they're brutal. Like, they're hard.
Yeah, it's rough. And I mean, you know, kind of fortunately, I mean, I had some of that. So I definitely, took some of the bad, you know, some of the bad stuff, but it's, you know, bad is good. You know, it does.
Right.
There is some things like, I mean, chemo does, it can do a lot. It can really help your body on that process, but they did some other things, you know, like immunotherapy, which is kind of a big thing these days and things like that. But, yeah, and what was crazy, you know, then I stayed clear scans and have for 8 years.
Oh, wow.
That's so great to hear. Like, absolutely. Because most of what my wife works on is that genomic testing, you know, precision medicine, and just,
yeah,
it's come so far in a really short period of time, but it's still in a period where it still feels like there's a lot more sad stories than happy stories. Yeah. And so,
So Chris, if you could give advice to, your younger self, when you got the diagnosis, if you knew then what you know now, what advice would you give yourself, do you think?
You know, I'd say that, there's this, okay, I'm going to talk about this. I'm going to connect with our audience here because they're climbers, right?
Yeah.
Right. There's actually a story in the Bible that involves some climbing. It's Jonathan and his armor bearer.
Yeah.
He said something that's like what I would say to myself. I'd say, you know, God is not limited to save, you know, by many or few. Essentially, this guy and his armor bearer, they climb up this wall. They free soar this wall. It's actually a place.
That's a good story. Yeah.
It's actually on Mountain Project. I can't remember the name of it right now. It's like, dang it. I can't remember it, but it's in like, it's in the Middle East, but it's, this, he climbs it. They go up and they get in this big battle, but that's the point is that God is not limited by circumstances. I'd say, you know, Chris, like, and you know, you never know. Like I don't control what God's going to do, but he, in this case, he did really bless me with that, but he always can. And I think that right there for people knowing that God can is hopeful, no matter what circumstance we're in, just knowing that he can and that he's good and that he cares, you know, like that, that's what I would have told myself. And I'd be like, yeah, I think that would have, it would have been helpful. And eventually I did kind of hear that, but.
Nice. Hey, would you mind putting a plug in for your cancer nonprofit that you work with?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So as a result of this, and honestly, this was not something I ever wanted to do. I did not want to have a cancer nonprofit, but you know, going through it, I understand what people go through. I have compassion. Mm-hmm. I really do. So we started Hope Has Arrived. I say we, it was me and my dad and some other people.
What's it called again?
Hope Has Arrived.
Okay.
And we started it in 2018. And the purpose is to help people find hope, strength, and peace against cancer.
Mm. Very cool.
We do that in four ways. I mean, kind of the main thing, like one of the big ones is stories of hope. Because, you know, you even said it, Mike, it's just like you don't always hear hopeful stories.
Yeah.
And there's something about hearing other people's stories, even, you know, everybody's story is unique. So it's not like, oh, that happened to them. This happens, you know, it's like, there's something about when you hear that someone else made it through something difficult, it kind of gives you like possibilities for your own story.
Yeah.
So that's a big part. I interview a lot of people impacted by cancer. I interview caregivers. I interview family members, tell hopeful stories. And, you know, it's not always like, it's not always what you'd think, you know, it's sometimes it's worst scenario, but it's like people finding hope in the midst of that. and, yeah. and seeing that there can be that even in the hardest times. So.
Oh man, I can't even imagine. I don't want to imagine. And
yeah,
I just have the deepest respect and hold people in just such high regard that go through those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And oh man. Okay, so you're also a writer. Does that have anything to do with your experience with cancer, or is it outdoor, or is it like a combo? What's your writing about?
Yeah, so I went to study journalism and creative writing in college, but
you're not the only climber outdoor person that has done that.
Yeah, you know, outdoors and writing, they're both really not great ways to make a living, but they're passion
ways to make a living, isn't there?
Yeah. They're kind of passion fields, you know. You do it because you like it. But I Hope Has Arrived. A lot of it is writing stories and writing, you know, hopeful articles, and so that's been a big part of the writing. But then also, you know, I used to write for some magazines and a newspaper. I've done some outdoor stories as well. But then recently, well, actually, I wrote a lot. I published an outdoor devotional through. It's called Sea Heart Press. And what's crazy about it is I wrote most of it while I was going through cancer.
Oh, wow.
And it's not what you would think. It's just a lot of, honestly, it gave me hope writing about a lot of outdoor adventures that I'd had, or even, you know, about some other people, and, you know, tied to some scripture, and I've gotten a ton of great feedback on it. It's been really fun to get it out there. So that's kind of been kind of how the writing part fits in. So
I love it.
Is it
like published? Is it something that,
yeah, yeah. So it's like, on
don't,
Amazon.
Don't miss this opportunity. Put a plug in.
Okay. All right. I'll throw the plug out there. All right. So it's on Amazon, but I'll give you guys a link. We're going to have it, you know, maybe put it in your show notes or something, but I'm going to put a link because I have it on, it's going to be on hopehasarrived.com. And what happened was, you know, the book's done pretty well, but the publisher is such an, actually, I met the guy who wanted to publish it at a climbing gym.
Nice.
Cool things happen at climbing gyms.
Yes.
So what they did is they actually donated some extra boxes of the books to me. And so I'm going to offer it on my Hope Has Arrived website. And so every single dollar, if people want to pick up a copy, every dollar will go to the Hope Has Arrived nonprofit to help other people find hope against cancer.
Great. Yeah.
So that's a plug I'm going to throw out there. And if people want to take me up on there, they're welcome.
Thank you.
You can buy it on Amazon, but the money won't really go to Hope Has Arrived. So
yeah.
Pick your path there. But
Yeah. So if they go to the Hope Has Arrived website and link through there, then all the money they spend on the devotional, on the material there, will go straight to Hope Has Arrived as a benefit to the cancer nonprofit.
That's correct. And here, I'll tell you guys something about that. So it's pretty cool. The ministry is a lot about, I mean, we do a lot of stories and articles and use those as ways to help people find hope. And we've figured it out that for every dollar people give to Hope Has Arrived, it helps us reach at least 10 people impacted by cancer.
Oh, wow.
That is great.
If you buy a $16 book,
yeah,
that helps us help 160 people.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a cool way to do it. But, you know, I wanted to share something about the climbing community, too, because I love what you guys do with, you know, climb hard, love harder. Like, that is just an awesome tagline. But I wanted to share something about that with even.
Yes, please.
Okay. Yeah. So
that was going to be one of our questions, like, what does this mean to you? So, or experience with it. So, yeah, say something.
Well, feel free to interrupt me because I don't want to like diatribe here. But
no.
But I just think, you know, something that the climbing community really is good at is community.
Yeah.
It's something that I've loved about it. Like, just, they really bring people around. Like cragging is so social. It's been like some of my most fun, like, outdoor experiences. I love skiing and all that, but sometimes it's harder to hang out with people doing that.
Yeah.
You know, everyone's kind of shredding the line, but climbing really brings community. And I think another part of that is that they also, because it builds community, they often care about people really deeply. And the thing about cancer is that, you know, I'm strange that I was 37 and got that bad of cancer. Like, that's not typical. You know, normally right. It's like people are, you know, well above 50 that get cancer. But the thing is that it seems like these days, like, that we're all gonna know someone who has cancer. Maybe it's someone at work or a family member, or, you know, God forbid someone, you know, would get it themselves. But that's, you know, like I said, that's rare. But like they say, it's like American Cancer Society says 1 out of 2 men and 1 out of 3 women will get cancer at some point in their lifetime.
Right. Yeah.
So I say this to the climbing community because I know they care about people well. I know this because when someone gets in a climbing accident, their community quickly forms a fundraiser for that.
Yeah,
they do.
I love that. And they also, they kind of care about marginalized people too. It's really interesting. So the two things I'd say is Hope Has Arrived is a really great resource. You know, if you know someone that's going through cancer, tell them about Hope Has Arrived. Like, it is like built for them to find hope.
Yeah.
And the second thing is we also have resources to help people care for people with cancer. So there's like this whole, you know, we have a cancer chaplain that's on our board and a bunch of other people, but he wrote this stuff about what not to say to someone with cancer or what to say, you know, that would be encouraging. And I would love to give you guys some links. Just like, the climbing community already cares. Let's just help equip them to even, you know, love even better. You know, let's do it. So,
yeah, so good. Yeah.
Shoot those to me and I'll include them in the description notes.
Yeah.
Love it. That's awesome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for that. Man, I can't even imagine. That's crazy. Well, Mike, what have we missed with this guy?
Oh my gosh. We've covered quite a bit. What's next?
Well, yeah. What is next?
What is next?
Well, I mean, you know, the Hope Has Arrived keeps growing a lot, and I was an outdoor guide. I was doing that full time, and this has kind of become my thing. And so like coming up, like I'm going to do like a big event in Colorado Springs for Hope Has Arrived, and then actually after that, they're going to have me share my story in South Dakota, actually, with a bunch of business people. This thing, nice. just because it's encouraging. And we're doing this whole topic, like hope against cancer. Because I think a lot of people are like, there is no hope there.
Right.
Just get it. Or there's no, you know. And so that's a big part of what I'm doing. On the fun front, I mean, gosh, my family and I, we're going to go to Southern Utah on a spring break trip soon.
What?
Sweet. Perfect.
And, you know, it's camping with little kids, so, you know, you dial it back quite a bit.
We've both been there until we get it.
Oh, my God. And I'm still married. And my children are still alive.
Then it's a win, man. It's a big win.
Right? It must have been okay, because everybody survived.
Well, I'm supposed to, you know, okay, I'm supposed to talk to a buddy actually later tonight. We're trying to plan a needles trip or something, or he's going to come out to Colorado. So there is more climbing on the horizon.
Good.
Too. What about you guys? You guys got any, you know, fun trips coming up?
Well, that's a good question. I actually just got back from a weekend in Bend, Oregon.
I know. I was so sick. I saw your pictures, and I was like, Mike, you dog.
But like non-climbing related, like in about 12 days, my wife and I are heading down to Cancun for spring break. No kids, no, awesome. Like just us.
Nice.
Sweet.
That is so good.
Yeah.
I don't have any big trips planned with a family and vacation-y type stuff until the summer. But while I will say though, that while I was lusting after your time, in Smith, I was actually ice climbing in Bozeman.
Dude, with no shirt on. I saw that photo.
With no shirt on. I know. It was so hot. Okay, so we got to the trailhead that morning. Not making this up. It was -1 degrees. And we were like, oh my gosh, we were going to, and we had a newbie with us. And so we were going to go over to like G1, G2, but it's all in the shade. So we thought, oh no. So we went to the opposite side of the canyon. This is a highlight canyon. Went to the opposite side in the sunshine, got over on unnamed wall. It was so hot. It was hot out. And about 3 or 4 hours later, another couple of guys came around. I think one was a guide. And we were like, you know, just kind of shooting it for a second. And we told him how cold it was when we were there. He said when they got out of their car, and this was, mind you, like 3 or 4 hours after we had, it was -5 degrees. Whoa. At the trailhead. It was cold. Now, the next day, we were up there because I did a wedding up there. And the next day we were up there, and it was 45 degrees.
Oh, my gosh.
It was 50 degrees difference in one day. And yeah, so anyway, I had a great time climbing up there, but I was all jealous over your Smith Rocks while I was actually living it up on the ice. So I have no room to talk. I'm just like, you know, I'm that kid that's got this delicious ice cream cone in one hand and I want the other kid's ice cream cone cuz it looks good or better.
I think I can relate to that. So you were in Highlight Canyon, I'm assuming?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's an awesome spot, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, so good. I really had it. It was fun. It was a great trip. Well, and this winter has just been the pits for ice for us here in Washington. We've been spoiled the last few seasons with like weekend after weekend after weekend with what really for Washington is unicorn ice. And, you know, it just rarely comes in, but it was coming in constantly. So we got kind of spoiled. And this next season, though, I think it's supposed to be La Nina. So we should have a lot more snow and ice, crossing my fingers. And because I don't think I can handle another bad ice season like this last one. And but I will tell you that the buddy I was with, we had some great shenanigans up in the mountains there, and tons of fun. And yeah, it was just good. And I got I knocked off some checklist stuff I wanted to do, and broke through a few little glass ceilings or ice ceilings, and it got a little bit better. So yeah,
nice.
Yeah, all the while looking at your pictures, going, how come I'm not there?
Yeah, you did miss some shenanigans between myself and Wilson involving a stick clip and chain reaction. It was a little Cirque du Soleil-ish, like, and
Well, we'll have to catch up a little bit about how Wilson was doing, and just like, what was his head? Was his head still in the game afterwards? Cirque du Soleil-ish. That sounds like
shenanigans. Dude, Eric, it was classic. All right.
Oh my gosh. Okay, I can't wait to hear about it. So, hey, Chris, before we wrap up here, is there anything else that you should have told us that we didn't ask you about? It's like, man, I really hope they asked me about this.
No, I mean, I think, man, we've covered some good stuff, man. I think, but you know, I guess maybe when we gonna go meet up and go climb somewhere?
Oh, dude, perfect. I would meet you up in South Dakota and have you show me the ropes, because when I got up there, I was only there for just a couple of days. Just long enough to get scared to death and think, why the heck would anybody ever climb this dangerous stuff? And then I was publicly, and then from there I went over to Devil's Lake and their quartzite. Oh my gosh, don't ever climb on that stuff. It's so slippery. Sorry, Chicago. Yeah. Sorry, Chicago and Wisconsin.
Yeah, that's the kind of stuff that's near my hometown. It's like that. Oh yeah, that stuff is nasty.
Oh, that's brutal.
It's slippery. Like,
yeah, okay. Yeah.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, you put gear in it, you're like, that's not going to hold.
I know, right? Oh my gosh, I've got some great stories about people. And all the anchors there are trad. They're at Devil's Lake. And so seeing newbies put a trad anchor in and climbing for the first time, and I was just like, oh my gosh, I can't look. I cannot watch this. I thought, I went over and I was like, I noticed that you did this anchor. Have you been climbing a long time?
Oh, no.
You know, that kind of thing. And finally they were like, no, I just started. We just built this. I said, well, I learned it a little bit different. Could I show you how I learned it? Oh, yeah. And to their credit, they were actually super open, but that's not always the case. But I thought, oh my God, they're going to die. So, oh, that's a whole nother story. And then I got a whole nother story about saying that loud, too loud. Oh my God, they're going to die. That's a different prank. Okay, real quick before we get off here, Chris, we got to ask you, you've done a lot of guiding. Have you ever used, would you ever use, and if so, what is your favorite pack animal?
Oh, man. You know, I've always wanted to lasso one of those wild burros in Red Rock Conservation Area, you know?
Yeah.
They're kind of elusive, though, man. Wouldn't they you love to have one of those, like, carry your stuff in?
That'd be amazing. Oh,
put, like, a cooler on them, you know, or something, have them carry that in. That'd be sick.
That'd be so sick. As long as they were agreeable to it. As long as they were agreeable.
Yeah. Nothing cruel. They would.
No, and you have to have something in it for them. Like, maybe there was a beer in it for them at the end of the
apple, or, you know, something. This would be like, they're like, yes, I would like to become your pack animal. It'd be like a contract, you know?
Like a mutual aid agreement.
That's correct, yeah.
I like that. Okay, and to wrap it up, when you're all done at the end of the day, you've been climbing or you've been shredding or out, you know, just hanging out with friends at the crag, do you have a favorite end of the send drink or snack? After you come out of the mountains, you're like, you're thirsty, you're hungry. What is your favorite snack or beverage of choice?
Oh, yeah. Man, depends on the day, but I think, something hydrating like Gatorade, but I mean, come on, an IPA is pretty nice sometimes.
Thank you!
I mean, I can't lie. But maybe go for more of like a Hefeweizen or something, just because like...
Oh. A little bit lighter.
Yeah, you know, like it's just... Yeah, but no, that's always a nice cap on the day for sure.
So good. Mike, I think we did well.
I think we did. Thanks for like roping me into this.
Dude, I am so grateful that you guest hosted.
Yeah.
You're a treat. Dean, watch out. Oh man, Chris, thank you so much for sharing your life and sharing your stoke. And helping us spread joy and love and stoke to the whole climbing and outdoor community. Yeah. And inspiring others on to love and good works at their local crag. Really grateful for that. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And thank you, Mike.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, right. I appreciate you guys. This has been a lot of fun. So thank you.
Oh, man. All right, you guys. Thank you so much. And thank you, audience, for listening.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed it.
I did.
I did too.
Every single time.
Every one of them. I'm getting over this dang Ronavirus cough. Okay, show of hands. How many people have had Ronavirus? Thank you. I see those hands. Two of them.
Two hands up for my part.
Yep. All right, you guys, we love you, and...
love you.
Listen in again next time.
And go love on your climbing community.
Yes, and spur them on to love and good works.
And loving yourself.
Good love. Thank you. Love, good works, and loving yourself. All right, see you later.
Ciao.